available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Final week of the regular season is done. We got championship week to look forward to and the Inconsequential Cup, or whatever you want to call it. We have a lot to talk about and not a lot of time, so we'll try to get to it all right away. If you have a question, you can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. We got like four voicemails today, David. I think we got like seven or eight text messages, a bunch of emails. You can also tweet at us at pac12podcast. The folks were asking when the episode was dropping. I said, we're recording right now. So we are doing that. The website's pac12podcast.com, and you can go over to Reddit. /r/podcastofchampions to find us there in that community. And we also love the Apple Podcasting app there. If you could follow and rate us with 5 stars, we really appreciate that. We're not going to read any reviews this week. I'm sure they're hilarious. I'm sure there's lots of them, all 5 stars, Dave.
All 5 stars. We just can't get to it today. It's going to be a, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot that happened in the Pac-12 over the last week or so. So we are stretching a little bit, but we've got a tight timeline today, real tight.
We have a tight. I know, and it's kind of crazy. Before we get into it, I just want to thank our sponsor, MyBookie. Oh, man, I was so close this week, David. I had all these bets that were good. I was winning on most of my bets, and I put a big one on USC. Did not cover. They actually played okay against BYU. And I had a parlay. I was doing it. I put it all in on that one. So I took a little bit of a bath this week, but go over to MyBookie. It's a great place to go and make your bets. We've been doing it here on the Podcast of Champions for a while. If you use the promo code PAC12 at MyBookie, they will match your first deposit immediately. It's going to double it all the way up to $1,000. So that's a quick turnaround for your investment. The NFL playoff race is heating up. And of course, college football bowl season around the corner. We got championship week. This weekend, you can double your firepower at MyBookie and get your action on the most important games of the season. You can build your own props, like I did one last week, create multiplayer game parlays, and take part in a host of MyBookie.ag cash prize contests. So it's the best time of the year to watch and bet on sports because you don't know who the winners are, but you're going to have a good feeling for it, whatever you watch by now. So don't miss out. Double your first deposit by using promo code PAC12 and keep your eyes peeled for exclusive holiday promos coming soon from mybookie.ag. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
Yeah, you finally made up some ground this week.
I did. So real quick, our picks. I was 4-3 and Dave was 2-5. So we only had two different and I end up getting both of those right. But yeah, I was talking to the guys over at the Pac-12 Apostles podcast, and I liked the over. He gave me the over on the Arizona game, the Arizona State game, and it was over by like a half a point. I was like, whew, I sweated out. I put, I had Washington State, the Arizona State over, and then USC. I mean, BYU, but BYU did not cover the 7. So, wah wah, it was a pretty good letdown for me. I know, it's been fun. I'm still up in my MyBookie account, but it would have been a really big one this week if those things would have hit. Okay, we got to get some. Breaking news, biggest news in the conference we've seen in a while. Washington State.
Darren Schifarini fired.
I was going to put Jake Dickert promoted. Well, Darren Schifarini was fired by Colorado. Duh. Like, you got to do that. Jake Dickert promoted. It was a cool video if you got to see it at Washington State. So I think that's a really good fit there.
That's almost as big of a duh. I mean, honestly, I think that was the obvious choice after how they performed over the back half of the year. Seemed energized, seemed committed, and that defense was a big part of it. So, yeah, that one makes a ton of sense, too.
I love it. And it seems like if you watch the video, like, I mean, everyone just seemed really excited. So that works out that way. You get an interim coach and he just kills it. And great for him and great for Washington State. Kalen DeBoer goes from Fresno to UW. Looks like they were kicking the tires with Matt Campbell along with USC. There's a bunch of rumors and things going on. But I like the DeBoer thing. And we just found out, so we're recording this Thursday. Morning, afternoon, Jake Haener had entered the transfer portal. Didn't say, I guess he did a interview with the Seattle Times. He said, you know, I know Wilner was reporting he's going to go to Washington and return. So you got another Jake there. You got to have a Jake quarterback. But he said, at least to the Seattle Times, I believe it was, that he hasn't made any decisions yet. So what do you think about Kalen DeBoer going to Washington?
I think it's a fantastic hire. I think UW did what they needed to do. I don't think they were going to be in the market for what we'll talk about in just a second, what some other schools were doing in terms of poaching, sitting head coaches of other Power 5 elite jobs. This is the next best thing. I think DeBoer has shown himself at the NAIA level and then also at Fresno State that he's a gifted coach. He's got really good offensive background. He's got the Jeff Tedford stamp of approval, which I think is huge. I think he checks a lot of boxes. I think he's going to and I think he mentioned this in his opening press conference, but I think he's going to not turn this into a full rebuild. He's going to try to use what's there, use what's in place, because that's still a talented program. There's still a lot of talent from the Peterson years just hanging out, you know, languishing under Jimmy Lake. But I think DeBoer is the kind of guy who could immediately turn that into next year, 8-4, 9-3 again, and then potentially back into, you know, conference title contention within a couple years.
I can guarantee you they're not going to score 7 points against an FCS squad anymore. So
yes, that will not happen.
But how crazy is it that this was an Apple Cup, and we'll talk about the games. It was an Apple Cup that featured two interim head coaches, both previous head coaches, Jimmy Lake, Nick Rolovich, never coached in an Apple Cup in their career.
I know, it's insane.
Like, just it's crazy.
Insane. Yeah, it's completely crazy. But it's the circumstances, and it was, you know, Jake Dicker is now 1-0 in the Apple Cup.
Yeah. Good for him. All right. So, yeah, and Washington State hasn't won a whole lot of
those. Was there any other news, though?
Okay, so there's this other one. I wish I had, like, some, like, Death Star music or something.
Yeah, no, the battle station is fully
up. Okay. Lincoln Riley, USC's new head coach, formerly of Oklahoma. I don't know. You might have heard of his resume, like, 5 years. 5 years Oklahoma, 3 trips to the college football playoff, 2 Heisman winners. Pause. I guess that's okay.
Pause, because does anyone else out there realize just how obnoxious this show is going to be going forward? Like, I want everyone to understand that they should just turn this off now.
We have a question.
Never listen again. Don't do it, because it's going to be so, like, when I do the, like, oh, UCLA is going to be good thing, it's like, sweet, it's cute, because they're never going to be good. Like, obviously, you know that. We all know that. When Ryan's going to be talking about good USC with Lincoln Riley, do you have any idea how irritating that is going to be to you, the people? Even you USC fans are going to be like, wow, this is a little insufferable. Like, it's not going to be good listening. I'm just letting you know.
We have a voice, I mean, an email about that for sure. And it's, you know, it's different than UCLA being good at basketball because, yeah, this is probably not going to be pretty. This is going to be a bloodbath, Dave. I don't know what to say.
Okay. All right. So Lincoln Riley. So you could make an argument, I think a fair one, that he's the most innovative offensive coach going in college football right now. His offense is not an air raid, though. If you want to continue, you the people, denigrating it as an air raid that's going to make USC soft, that's fine. I'll even make those jokes myself, but it's not. It's like a run-oriented spread, largely. He's really, really good. Like, his offense is really good. He's a maniac recruiter by all accounts. He's in Norman, Oklahoma, and he was recruiting Southern California better than probably either USC or UCLA the last couple of years. Now he's in Southern California. He's going to bring that same level of mania. He's also 38, which means he has, like, I don't know, 30 more years of coaching. So you've got to really hope that he wants to go to the NFL pretty soon. It could not work out. Lots of things could not work out, but this is as close to a slam dunk as any hire could be. It's maybe, I was talking about this with Tracy on the broadcast yesterday, it's maybe literally the best hire anyone has ever made in college football at the time of hire. Like, for what it was, which was hiring from an elite, like, all-time power in college football to another elite all-time power in college football with the kind of resume that Riley already has. And then on top of all of that, for USC, I mean, I think everyone makes the argument, well, USC always recruits well, and that's true to an extent. I mean, Clay Helton tested the depths of that, but it is true to an extent that USC will always pretty much recruit well. But there's a difference between recruiting well and recruiting at the level that Riley is more than likely going to recruit. There's a difference essentially between top 15, top 10, and top 5, top 3. That's like a difference of a couple of 5 stars every single cycle. That adds up. I mean, we all bore witness to the Pete Carroll Death Star in the mid-2000s, largely built on elite level recruiting, multiple number one classes. That's the kind of stuff you have to be fearful of with Riley at USC. And yeah, you can make the argument, oh, it's just one game on the schedule or whatever. It's going to have ramifications and impacts for all through the entire league. Yes, some of them positive in terms of exposure and college football playoff berths and that sort of stuff. And a lot of it negative, because it's going to suck up a lot of that West Coast talent that even was staying within the footprint. Like Oregon, you actually have to deal with another school recruiting at that level or higher. You know, Washington, you're no longer going to be able to poach certain California kids. It's a major problem. And I think the people who are downplaying it are, you know, going through various levels of grief, various stages of it.
I've always advocated that, like, you know, I do think it's a bonus for the Pac-12. I think George Kliavkoff is very happy. But when I saw the Pete Carroll stuff happening.
So just be very clear. It's a bonus to the Pac-12 as an organization. It is not a bonus to the rest of the schools in the league, except in the actual monetary value it'll bring in the CFP. It's going to be a negative for the schools in the league who actually want to win games, because it's going to be another loss on their schedule many years.
Yeah, potentially. But I would say what I saw in the late 90s, if you remember, like, guys from De La Salle and Mater Dei, they were going to, like, Miami and Florida State and all that kind of stuff. And Pete Carroll sort of made it cool to stay on the West Coast. I think that's, if you're a Pac-12 fan, you want USC to keep some of those high five-star guys, and maybe more of the other guys are going to stay local too. You know, it's probably going to have the biggest impact on Oregon, because they were recruiting Southern California, picking out some of those five-star guys. Does a Kayvon Thibodeau end up at Oregon if Lincoln Riley's the head coach? Like, probably not. You know, I mean, there's things like that.
Does Bryce Young end up at Alabama if Lincoln Riley's the head coach?
Hell no. No.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not. Or they're getting at least one of Bryce Brown or CJ Stroud. I mean,
right.
Yeah. And right now it's funny. I'm going to watch this. So and you were talking about USC recruits itself. They've cut most of the recruiting class already. They're like, yeah, these guys aren't good enough, so we're getting rid of them. They're down to 4 commitments for 2020. Signing period, as we're recording this, is in 13 days. They're 104th in the country, 12th in the Pac-12.
You only have to read.
They'll probably finish in the top 15.
Like, you only have to read
in 13 days.
Greg Biggins' posts on your board to understand that they're going to finish with a top 15 class at least.
Yeah. It's going to be like maybe the biggest turnaround we've ever seen. Like, it's literally 104th in the country right now, and it'll probably be like 12th or something. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, obviously big impact. We have a lot of questions on it, so we can probably address more of that stuff.
Yeah. Let's definitely talk more about USC later.
Yeah. We got to do it. I mean, there's a lot.
I definitely want to talk more about USC and the budding Death Star.
Hey, but the UCLA basketball teams, you know, they'll probably make the Sweet 16 again or something. Isn't that good? Like, that's
see, positive. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm talking about. You out there, the people. Did you just hear that comment? It's going to be nonstop. It's going to be constant. And just turn it off now. I'm telling you.
I did hear USC was down to.
That's why I can help you right now.
It was Lincoln Riley and Clancy Pendergast. They were going back and forth, like the Super Bowl appearance versus all those, you know, Heisman trophies. You almost got your wish, though. They almost got Pendergast, but they ended up with Lincoln Riley. Okay. Hey, good news for the Pac-12. Jayden Daniels is going to be back, and he's going to be back with Arizona State. So he's not like going to UCLA or something. I mean, he's staying at ASU. Is that a big deal?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, they got a They got to support him better. He's regressed, I think, every single year he's been there. So I think, whatever they're doing offensively wasn't really working. So hopefully he and Zach Hill can get on the same page a little bit better next year. But yeah, I mean, it's good for them. They don't have to replace a quarterback.
Did you say Helton or Herm? I think you might
have
said
what?
I think you said him and Helton have to be on the same page.
Oh, Hill. Zach Hill.
Oh, Hill. I'm sorry about that. Okay. They do lose Rashad White. He's going to skip the bowl game and begin NFL smart. Draft prep.
Smart man. Good yeah. job. You were awesome. You were fun to watch. Enjoy the NFL.
I tried to write some other ones down. I know I'm forgetting some other ones, guys that are staying or entering the portal and stuff. Was there anything that stuck out to you? Remember any other ones?
No, I was mostly paying attention to UCLA. They were losing like guys who might have broken the two deep this year, but not really. They lost their starting punter for the portal.
Oh,
interesting. But no, I mean, nothing really jumped out to me.
Okay. Well, I did the power rankings. I don't know if you've even looked at them, but if you don't I'm sorry. But let's go through them. We'll go through the games. We actually had seven games this week, too, so it's even a little crazier. First up, we had
Stanford Cardinal.
And they were hosting Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
The Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Yeah, Notre Dame in Brian Kelly's swan song put the pasting to Stanford, beat the living hell out of them. I did feel like Stanford was moving the ball generally better in this one. It seemed like every time I turned it on, Stanford was like, they had the ball and they were like looking a little bit okay. But then I look at the stats and they were not good. No explosive plays whatsoever. Notre Dame just, they look like, I mean, they shouldn't make the playoff over Cincinnati, but if things go really weird this weekend with the conference championship games, they actually look like one of the better Notre Dame teams from the last, I don't know, from the Brian Kelly era, which is now over. Brian Kelly, as an aside, complete scum, absolute horrible person, awful man in many ways. But what he did this weekend, kind of par for the course. I think a lot of the histrionics about him leaving Notre Dame for LSU or just, you know, whatever. He's a guy who wanted to go make some more money and potentially get a sick retirement gig and while also winning at probably a higher level. So I don't hate the move. I just hate him because he's an awful person.
Yeah. He just puts a beat down on Stanford and then takes off.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like this is where it gets absurd because this is Oklahoma wasn't going to be a playoff team this year. Notre Dame might be.
Yeah.
Notre Dame has a I would say not even like a really outside chance. It's like two things break right this weekend and they're in the playoff.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to Brandon Sosna, the chief of staff at USC, and he was pacing in the when USC's playing BYU pregame. It's the Bedlam game. He's pacing because he knows they're going to try to get Lincoln Riley. But if they win that game. If Oklahoma wins, he's definitely not going to be the head coach right now. You'd wait after the Pac-12 champ. I mean, the Big 12 championship game, and that might not happen at all. So, just weird the way the ball bounces. But that was a weird one. And I think just LSU wanted to get Lincoln Riley. He ends up at USC, so they still want to go big game hunting, and they get Brian Kelly. But it's weird. Stanford's butt. We know this.
Big asshole. Big
butt. Like the worst team in the Pac-12. We have a voicemail. Can I play it right now? I know it's a little unorthodox, but this is going to be entertaining for everyone. We have the Zodiac Killer's back, everybody. And he's finally eating a little crow. Here you go.
Well, well, well. Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. Yeah, that's right. It's me, here to lay the proverbial golden fiddle right at the ground of Ryan's feet. Because Stanford is butt, and I cannot lie. You other teams can't deny. When Shaw walks in with a punt two waste and a plus field in your face, you get sprung. Want to pull up tough because you notice that punt was muffed? Deep in the schemes he's wearing. You're hooked and you can't stop staring. Oh, baby, I got to get with ya and take your picture. You boys try to warn me, but that Stanford D makes OCs funny. Zodiac out. Oh. One more thing. Which division, North or South, turned out to be the strongest one, team for team? Mixed logic answers only. Zodiac out. Keep it mediocre, boys.
How good is that?
That was beautiful. I loved every minute of it. Okay, well, he had an official question there at the end.
Yeah.
Which division turned out better?
North.
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
Yeah, even with Stanford dragging them down, like that's the only thing. Yeah, that's the only problem.
You know what? No. I'm going to base it entirely on this weekend. Not Utah, Oregon. No, sir. I'm going to base it on the fourth place teams in each division.
Okay.
California versus USC. Who wins that game is going to determine the answer for me.
Oh, I like it. All right. So
there's your mixed logic right there.
It's not going to be inconsequential. It'll determine the best division. I'm with you, man. I like it. Thanks, Zodiac Killer. We were waiting for you. And you know, we expected something good and we got it. So
he delivered.
Very cool. Okay. Let's go to the Territorial Cup. We have number 11.
Arizona Wildcats.
I got him up at number 6.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
You know, this one was potentially going to be competitive. Like, it really was. But turnovers killed Arizona. So Arizona State ended up winning 38-15. They covered. It was a 20-point spread, and they covered. But, I mean, Arizona was, I mean, Will Plummer moving the ball okay. But he threw a bad pick. They didn't run the ball particularly great, and ASU really chopped through this entire defense. This is one of the better offensive performances for ASU this year, probably. Despite their usual number of insane penalties, I think the two teams combined for over 200 yards in penalties in this game, which, you know, not so great. But ASU had 314 yards. They had 228 of them on the ground. Getting that level of production on the ground, I think, was huge, which is why I'm calling it their better offensive games, even with Jaden Daniels not necessarily doing a whole lot through the air.
Yeah, Arizona outgained Arizona State. I think we both got this wrong, right? We both had Arizona plus, it was plus 20, I think. And didn't work out. Plus 20. Arizona had more yards, but, you know, they didn't. They weren't able. They threw a pick. They lost a fumble. They held the ball for like 10 minutes more than ASU, but still with all that, and you still weren't able to keep it within 20 points. That's if you would have told me all those things, like Arizona gets more yards, a couple turnovers, but you know they possessed the ball 10 minutes longer than Arizona State. I'm like, okay, they'll keep it within 20. Nope, they did not.
Yeah, they need a couple more playmakers, because Arizona's actually like been able to hold on to the ball when they've been competitive in games. They've been able to hold on to the ball and have like relative efficiency. They just don't get big plays. And I think that's got to be something that gets figured out next year. But they also just make a ton of mistakes, just a lot of penalties, a lot of turnovers. But there's something to be like hopeful for there, because even with the lack of talent and even with all those mistakes, they have been like, this was a competitive game at halftime. It really only got non-competitive pretty late. So, at halftime, I think Wilner's tweet was great, because all the ASU fans were like, no, that's not true. He tweeted out, Arizona leads 9-14, because that was the feel of this game. and then it just got away from him in the second half because of all the mistakes. But they looked competitive in so many games this year. And I think next year they just have to be competitive throughout games more than they were this year. You know, in the way that like a lot of coaches who have like really bad seasons say, we're close. I think Jed Fish can actually say that without feeling ridiculous, because even at 1-11, 1-8, they were close in a lot of games. They were competitive in a lot of games, and it was just really just like snowballs. You know, things just snowballed at a certain point because of, mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, ASU had, what, 5 touchdowns in this one, and Arizona had 1 and like 3 field goals. It's just like, you know, it's like 3 points, 6 points, 6 points, and Arizona State was like 7-7, 17-7. Yeah, so it just didn't go their way. But they, like you said, I think they're more competitive. We have them ahead of Stanford, even though, you know, Stanford has a couple more wins. But 1-11, but the best 1-11 team in the country, I can guarantee you that, David Woods.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go our number 10 team.
Washington Huskies.
They were hosting, it's our number 3 team. Oh, we got to play the good one.
Washington State Cougars.
Wow. So not only did Washington State break the streak, but they did it in emphatic fashion, beating Washington 27 points in Seattle, 40-13.
Was it that close?
Did you just hear the announcers? I think Sam Heward just threw another interception. That was a really sad watch to see him kind of get his first meaningful time this year, and then it should just be an absolute disaster. The picks were bad too. And it was clearly just a guy who's very green, getting thrown into a tough spot in a really competitive game that, you know, both teams are geared up for emotionally, and he just was not able to meet the level of play. He just looked really bad. Washington could have served him better by probably getting him some time earlier in the year. But he was a disaster out there, and Jaden Delora was excellent. He threw no touchdowns, but really, really efficient throwing the ball, making great decisions. Somebody was saying it on the broadcast, but he has an argument to be the best quarterback in the Pac-12 this year. After, just kind of what he's done over the last half of the season, especially. But he looked really good. Max Borgi had one of his better days of the season. They just put it to Washington, and Washington's defense really wasn't able to hold up at all. Obviously their offense did nothing when they're throwing four interceptions, but the defense was not able to hold up at all, and the end result was a massive beatdown.
Yeah, massive beatdown. Sam Heward, the five-star quarterback, he gets the start, like Dave said, through 47 picks. Washington State, and I agree with you, just Delora, I think he's still leading the league in touchdown passes. It's weird that he didn't get one in this one. It was 13-7 at the end of the first half, and it just felt like Washington State was killing him. And I was like, I put a note in, the only person stopping Washington State's offense was Michael Mothershed. They were making all these calls against Washington State, it was almost like, okay, we're going to try to keep this close. And then they just really couldn't. Washington State also had I think it was the end of the first half. They didn't call timeout, and the clock was running. They had a minute or something left to score. They just wasted a lot of time, and it was this kind of weird, clunky thing. But in the second half, it sort of settled in the way it should have gone, the way you felt the first half should have went. And Washington State fans stormed the field in Seattle. Oh, yeah. How crazy
that was!
That
was awesome. Storming an opposing field, that was great. It was like the beaches of Normandy all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But good for the Cougs. We get to play the cool Coug drop a lot this season. We have up number three. You feel like that's a good spot for them in our power rankings?
I love it. I think it's perfect. I think it's exactly where they should be.
All right. Next up, we have our number nine team.
Colorado Buffalo.
And they were on the road. For our number one team.
Utah Utes.
Yeah, so another kind of strange game. If you just looked at the yardage totals for this game, you would have assumed Utah won by approximately 150 points.
We both had Utah minus 24. We were wrong.
Right, and we're both very upset. Utah ended up winning comfortably, 28-13. It was a lot closer than it should have been. Colorado ran the ball for 64 total yards and threw it for 84 total yards. That is the sum total of their offensive output. Utah outgained them either in passing or in rushing. In total, Utah's passing attack of 179 yards outgained Colorado. And their rushing attack, certainly of 265 yards, outgained Colorado. It was just, kind of one of those weird games where, Utah threw a pick, but also there was some just field position stuff going on. That let it be, a closer game than it really needed to be. Colorado was unable to really do much of anything offensively. It was a very strange game, one that pissed both of us off really bad because of Utah's inability to cover. But in the end, it was another, when you look at it, it was another dominant win for Utah. It was another of a string of dominant wins for Utah. I think they can take from this that, yes, they are still that surging power from the back half of the Pac-12 season.
Yeah, they just didn't look like Utah. Didn't look like they had a sense of urgency here. They could win comfortably. They weren't going to push anything. Colorado had a special teams touchdown. So that's sort of you try to cover a 24-point spread and you give up a special teams touchdown. Not always easy to do. There were also a couple of failed fourth and ones where Utah would have scored and did not. And, you move the ball, you move the ball, you move the ball, and then you don't score on the fourth and one. But Colorado's not going anywhere anyway. It just kind of wastes time. You don't put up points, and Colorado's not going to put up points. So it's sort of just you're kind of keeping your little brother at bay with the outstretched arm, right? And it didn't matter how bad you beat him up. And Utah didn't beat him up that bad, even though it should have been worse. So this was one of those ones where Utah covered easily the previous week and did not cover in this one. But you could see this one coming. You know, it's a big spread. And if things, you know, a few things go Colorado's way, Utah's not going to like go out of their way to try to win by 30.
Right.
Yeah. Which is basically what happened here. Okay. Our number eight team,
USC Trojans.
They were taking on Pac-12 South or Pac-12 champion BYU Cougars, 5-0 in the Pac-12. Crazy.
Oh, yeah. Totally nuts. USC semi-competitive?
They played pretty good. They one of their better games, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, all together.
Maybe mad.
I mean, it should make you mad. I mean, defensively, still bad, right? We'll still call them bad defensively.
But it was bad. Like, they swarmed to the ball more. Like, they weren't. So when you saw a UCLA game, like, it was. They were struggling to get to third down. Like, it wasn't. UCLA was converting a lot of third downs. They weren't even getting to third downs. This was like you pushed BYU a little bit to like.
Okay. Got it. So very, very cool. We're judging relatively now. So like relative to the UCLA performance where USC's defense was a turnstile, this was only bad. It wasn't horrible.
It was bad.
It wasn't
but,
absolutely horrifying. It wasn't something that you couldn't look away from because it was so much like the Carver.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. Well, in that realm, yes, this was a better defensive performance. It was not good by any stretch of the imagination, but at least forced a couple of turnovers. Offensively, though, I think this was a step in the right direction for Jackson Dart. I thought he looked a lot more comfortable than he did in the UCLA game. And running the ball, you know, it was nice to see Valve Malapai have a nice game, because this is what? Probably his second to last game as a Trojan? Is that right?
Yeah. He's a captain, sixth-year guy. They were kind of putting him in red zone most of the time. He had three touchdowns, I think, against UCLA. But, you know, with Keontae Ingram out, they still ran the ball. Like, they actually pushed BYU around a little bit. I think they won in the trenches and stuff, but just, you know, it's just a team that's a mess. They just played. It was a much better-looking mess than what we saw before.
Yeah, and so, I mean, they finished, the game was, it was 35-31, and it felt like a 35-31 game. Every time it seemed like BYU was finally putting it together, I mean, this was 14-3 at one point, it was 21-10 at one point, it was 28-13 at one point, USC would just start putting some drives together again. Like, it was the most, one of the most resilient games I think I've seen from USC this year, and I think that's, you know, it doesn't matter because the leadership's going to be entirely different next year and the players are probably going to be largely different next year. I'm sure they're going to hit up the transfer portal a lot, and I'm sure some guys are going to be encouraged to transfer out. But I think if you're a USC fan, at least they looked like they had some fight in them. They at least looked like they were, you know, really, really strongly trying the entire game, which I don't think has been the case for USC all season.
Yeah, a little bit of fight there. Really, it was pretty apparent late. You're like, BYU's not going to cover. I'm like, oh, I had so many bets like based on this one. It's like really made me mad. But whatever. Okay, so we'll move on from that. USC still has one more. We'll talk about that later. The team they're going to play, actually, we'll talk about right now. The number seven team.
California Golden Bears.
They were in the Rose Bowl taking on the number five team.
UCLA Bruins.
Okay, so UCLA, I think we need to kind of reimagine the last 10 quarters of football for UCLA, because now it suddenly looks like this is a team that found its footing at the end of the season. Now, we've been fooled by this before with UCLA under Chip Kelly in years one and two, where they looked better at the end of the season than they did in the middle stretches. But once again, so since halftime of the Colorado game, UCLA, I think, has outscored its opponents by something over 90 points. It's been an average of like four touchdowns, a little over four touchdowns per game. This was another one. Blew California away, 42-14. Cal, Chase Garbers looked like early season disaster Chase Garbers in this one because of all the pressure UCLA was putting on him. He was taking bad checkdowns, but also he was making poor decisions in the run game, often just running out of bounds after a yard rather than trying to stick it, you know, for 5 or 6 yards up the middle. I think the defense was really the story, especially middle of the second quarter on. And frankly, seven of these points came on an extremely short field because of a fumbled kickoff return. They shut down this entire California offense starting middle of the second quarter on. And UCLA offensively, I think it was, again, a really, really good game from Dorian Thompson-Robinson. He wasn't as explosive as he was against USC, but he was really efficient. And the game plan was much more to attack laterally rather than to go with these big vertical shots like it was against USC. And he executed it really well. And even with his stats, there was one missed throw to Kaz Allen where it literally just went through his hands on a deep post that would have been a touchdown. And, you know, that would have changed the statistical outlook even more. But he also ran the ball extremely well in this game. Zach Charbonnet was running the ball very, very well up the middle and just kind of grinding efficiently. But this was a comprehensive game. Probably one of their better wins of the season came in the 12th game. UCLA finishes 8-4. 6-3 in the Pac-12, clear improvement for Chip Kelly. You know, obviously for me and for a lot of people, it's probably not enough to make up for the first 3 years, but I think for UCLA's administration, it's going to be.
Yeah, Bruins were -7. I got this one right, and Dave had Cal, which was, you know, always cool. Yeah, early on, like Cal, I think, cut it 10-7, and then the UCLA fumbled the kickoff, and then Cal takes the lead, and I'm like, whoa, this is weird. But at that point, it's 14-10, and UCLA scores 32 straight points. They had, I think, Cal had a first and goal, and the UCLA defense had a goal line stand on fourth down, really fired up the defense. Dulcich had that amazing touchdown grab. So, yeah, UCLA played really well, especially, like you said, the second half they just dominated. The good news, I mean, for the conference, you know, we had some big news, right, like Kalen DeBoer, Jake Dickert, you know, Lincoln Riley. But the fact that we know that Chip Kelly is going to be around 8-4, amazing turnaround that he made with this team. He's going to be around a long time in Westwood. So it's good to see. It's good for the conference. You need that stability. Hopefully there'll be some sort of Martin Jarman will sign him to a long extension in the offseason. And you'll have a lot of stability over there in Westwood. So good to hear that and good to see that.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate all of your love and support in this time.
Wait,
it's a very tumultuous time.
Is there some irony in any of this, or no?
Turnabout is indeed fair play, but I don't have to like it. It's a gross feeling knowing that UCLA is going to go into next year more than likely still with Chip Kelly. And he's probably going to be in place at least for 2 years if you go ahead and look at UCLA's schedule next year. Bowling Green, South Alabama, and I think Alabama State feature prominently in the non-conference.
But honestly, like his contract's like to be, you know, just to be transparent, like his contract's coming up, like he's got to do something. Like there has to be
a year or two or something. They're going to give him a 2-year extension, is my guess. Okay. It's the kind of thing where, like, if you're UCLA and you could start over right now, or really, actually, the smart time would have been a year ago, then you're a step ahead of USC in your rebuild. The thing is, I think if you're UCLA now, you have to commit to the idea that Chip Kelly is building towards something still. And I don't know that that's true. I really don't. I think this was the culmination year and it was 8-4. But I think you have to. If you're UCLA now, it's okay. If we're keeping Chip Kelly, then you've got to hire a better defensive coordinator and probably revamp the entire staff from top to bottom and look at, okay, who's going to be a recruiter and who isn't. Because if anyone learned anything from the USC years, it's that you have to compete on the recruiting trail. You can't just concede. I mean, Carl Durrell essentially conceded for the first 3-4 years of his time at UCLA, and it was devastating to the program. You have to still compete. You might lose a lot of the recruiting battles, but you have to compete because there are still going to be those guys who want to, you know, zig when other people zag, and you have to be in it with them. You have to still be competing and fighting for them. And UCLA's current strategy is not to compete. It's to hit the transfer portal and, you know, do way too much out-of-state recruiting for 3 stars. They've got to get back to focusing on Southern California. It sounds counterintuitive with USC probably becoming full-powered again here pretty soon, but you still have to do it. You can't do what Carl Durrell did for the first 3 years because that will allow USC to get a stable talent advantage that is just far and away above what you have.
All right, we got one last game, what was formerly called the Civil War. We'll probably still call it that. Our number 4 team.
Oregon State Beavers.
And our number 2 team,
Oregon Ducks.
Okay. So, this one was, again, a kind of a weird one because Oregon, I thought, had like meaningful control of this one heading into the fourth quarter. But the final score ended up a little bit closer than probably what the game was. This was an Oregon comfortable win. They ended up winning 38-29. It was very weird. Did you see Oregon State go for two to get it within nine towards the end of this game?
Yeah, like Jonathan Smith is a great coach, and maybe that was a brain fart, but that was a it was definitely the wrong decision. Like
that was just, not mathing at a high level. I mean, it functionally didn't matter, but it was just odd to see that. I wonder if they, I don't know, just misapplied the score. But yeah, that gives you the picture. It was 38-21 really late in this game. Oregon had complete control. I thought they rebounded really, really well this week. You know, because it's a spot that could have been an emotional letdown. Seeing their playoff hopes dissipate. But then they put together, I think, one of their better offensive games of the late season. Anthony Brown, I thought, was about as good as he's been all year in this one. They ran the ball well. They threw the ball well. And defensively, look, it wasn't perfect. Chance Nolan was allowed to do a little bit, but they really shut down this Oregon State rushing attack. And that's been a problem for a lot of teams this year. This was one of the better wins, I think, for Oregon all season. And I think they should take some solace in that. And I think they're going into this rematch this weekend with maybe some renewed confidence and a little bit of, we need to take it to these guys to show them who's the boss of the league. Whether that'll be successful is anyone's guess. But this was Oregon showing its level, showing its talent level. And Oregon State's just not there. As nicely schemed as the offense and defense are for Oregon State, especially now they've made a change at defensive coordinator, you can't beat talent, and I think Oregon showed up.
They did, and this is the other one I got right. I had Oregon -7. It got a little close at the end, but like you said, I think it was more comfortable. To me, you just watch the game. It looked like Oregon pushed Oregon State around. We know the Beavers are better at home. The defense doesn't seem to travel that well. Thought maybe it's not that far of a drive. Like maybe the defense would travel to Eugene. It did not. Oregon, I thought, got what it wanted, and then, you know, sort of got closer at the end. But I just felt in the trenches, Oregon bounced back, and this is a very physical Oregon State team, and they were able to push them around a little bit. And I think this is a good way to sort of like reset everything if you're a Duck fan and get ready for another physical team in Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. Won't be in Salt Lake City. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I thought this went as well as it could. As long as you don't feel down that you kind of gave up some late points and made it closer than really what it felt like.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So we still have, we still have Utah #1, like we mentioned before, but that is the end of the regular season. Dave, unfortunately, dips back under 500. He's 40-42-1. I got a couple of games closer. I'm 38-44-1. So we still got the championship week and bowl games to pick. So we'll see if it'll come down, what we can do there. We got to preview the games. Why don't we, let's do the inconsequential one first.
The Pac-12 title game, correct?
Yeah, that one. Because, yeah. Well, okay, we'll start with this one.
USC Trojans.
They're on the road, taking on
California Golden Bears.
If you want to do the COVID cancel, that's why we have this. I don't know.
COVID canceled. Rescheduled. we're traveling deep into the future, and then we're going to go back in time in a second for whatever reason, because this is the true marquee matchup. USC traveling to Berkeley, a pair of 4-7 teams taking on each other in a game after the conference championship game. It will be meaningless in many ways. It's on at 8 p.m. Also, it's going to be a super late night game on FS1.
11 p.m. Eastern time is when, like, it will kick off.
There is so much stupid happening for this game to be played, and it is all because of those juicy, juicy, moist TV dollars. Cal is favored by 4 points at home against USC. So Cal looked like big booty this past weekend against UCLA. USC looked better against BYU. Does USC have another good chance this weekend? Hey, let's ask Dante Williams. Oh, right. They had to delay practice for 45 minutes this week because not everyone was on the same page. When pressed, Dante Williams had absolutely no clarification to offer about what that meant. It was just this weird obfuscating quote about everyone in the program has to be on the same page for us to practice and get ready for Cal. And so there's turmoil this week in practice. I'm sure there's a lot of staff members who are like, I'm not being retained by Lincoln Riley. Why the hell am I caring about this? I'm sure there's a lot of players who are like, do I fit into Lincoln Riley's new system here? And the end result is this is going to be a USC team that does not care one iota about this football game. Cal, on the other hand, probably also doesn't care about this football game, but they're at least a meaningful, cohesive team with like players who might want to show well in their final game in a Cal uniform. So I'm going to give it to Cal. Cal minus four. I'm taking them.
Yeah, USC was actually opened as like a 1.5 point favorite or something. It's now Cal minus four. Same thing. Like I was there at the beginning. I don't usually go to the Wednesday practice because we only watch some and then we have to wait around and they make us leave and then do interviews afterwards. I was there. Not like USC sports information director is retiring and I got him like a cake and some card. I wanted to come see it out. Didn't really expect anything to be happening. And we get there and I'm getting texts on the way in. It's like, hey, there's like some sort of thing going on with the players. And like they came out and went back in the locker room. Then players were coming out like piece by piece. And it's like well after the time practice was supposed to start. Some of the coaches would go into the locker room, come back out of the locker room. Dante Williams came out later. Yeah, we're hearing a lot of weird stuff, but it seemed like Dante Williams, we asked him this morning on a Zoom call if anything was about not wanting to play the Cal game. And he said no, but I think that's not true. I think that's part of what was going on here. He did go on this long diatribe about mentioning like all these people that work there. You know, there's like it's the video guys, it's the support staff for recruiting, it's you know, the tutors, whatever. Like there's a lot of people. And essentially, all of their jobs are on the line. Like they could be gone after Saturday's game, which is completely true. I mean, and you don't blame. There's a lot of good people there, but unfortunately, you had horrible, horrible leadership, and you had a terrible head coach who assembled like a bad staff, and then they tried to piece it together with other people. And yeah, most likely, everyone's going to be gone. You have to. The culture was so bad, you have to clean it out, and you feel bad. And now they have to do this weird game after you've already hired a coach. So it's very weird. I'm going to go with Cal too. It just seems like I don't think there's going to be a lot of motivation on this USC team. Now, I didn't think they would against BYU, and they had a bad week of practice, Dave, going into the BYU game, and somehow they came out and played with a lot of heart and desire, which I don't know why, but I have a hard time picturing them do it twice in a row.
Agreed.
Very weird. Okay. Sorry. It was just a weird, like just weird stuff at practice, which I've done this a million times where you're like, what is going on? Like 2014. I'm going into practice on a Sunday because they played USC played Thursday night, Washington lost. And I get texts on the way into practice. Sark's not here. Like, uh-oh. Like, so then you're like, wait, the head coach isn't at practice. And you know, that ended up being the end of his career there, but very weird stuff. They're kind of the same vibe. This one. Okay. Next up we've got
Oregon Ducks.
Winners of the Pac-12 North. Taking on
Utah Utes.
Winners of the Pac-12 South. What do you got, Dave?
All right. So this one a couple weeks ago was 38-7 Utah. If you remember that game, it was that big of a blowout. I mean, it was 28-0 at halftime. They had the game controlled. They had big special teams plays. They ran the ball extremely well. It was a you know, pretty comprehensive beating for Oregon. Now, Oregon is coming off a much better win. They looked a lot better this past weekend than they did 2 weeks ago against Utah. But that's still, you know, pretty recent history we're talking about. We're not talking about something that's in the distant past. We're talking about something that happened literally 2 weeks ago.
That was last month, David. Yeah. That was November. We're in December now.
We're talking about a thing that happened 2 weeks ago. Okay. Now, Utah has, outside of the Arizona game, which was weird, put together four straight dominant wins, again, ignoring the Arizona game. Oregon's not done that. They've been up and down, but this past weekend we saw their talent show out. Here's what I think. I think it's going to be a closer game. So it's at 5 p.m. on ABC on Friday. You know, it's going to be in Vegas. Utah's a 2.5 point favorite. I think it's going to be a lot closer game. I think Oregon will play a lot better. I just simply think Utah's better right now. So I'm going to take Utah to cover the 2.5. I think they win this by like a touchdown and secure the conference title this year.
So I need to try to catch up a little bit, but I do. I'm kind of going back and forth on this one. But for some reason, I think Oregon's going to bounce back and get a couple points. You know, Mike,
we have now flipped our picks from 2 weeks ago.
We have. Hopefully I get them both right. But yeah, I'm going to go Oregon. Give me the 2.5 points.
Yeah, whenever you can take a team that lost 2 weeks ago to the exact same team by 31 points and you're, you know, getting 2.5, why not, you know?
Yeah. Well, unless you want to take USC, I want to get one of them different than you. So you
yeah, no, I don't. I do not want to take USC. So, yeah, I'm comfortable with this.
Okay. I'll take the Duckies. I will be there. Press box covering this one. If any Podcast of Champions listeners are going to be around and you want to meet up before the game or something, yeah, send us an email or whatever. Hit me up. That would be good. Like, I got to meet some Pac-12 podcast listeners for the USC Arizona State game. If anyone else is going to be out there, the championship one, I'll be there. So let me know.
Sounds good.
Cool. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and do questions. All right, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. Got a lot of questions to get to. I think the first email, we got some voicemails too, but the first
from
email
Andrew,
is
right?
Robert, I believe.
What day?
This is on the 24th, Wednesday.
No. We recorded early last week, if you remember. Yeah, it's going to be Andrew.
And, oh man, oh, there's...
Yeah, because we recorded on Sunday last week, if you remember.
Okay. Holy cow. We got a lot
Okay. All right. So this is from Andrew. We're going to go quick, guys. It's not going to be long responses. Podcast of Champions question. Andrew, if I'm allowed two, both for Dave. One, with UCLA trending up and the beatdown of USC, will Chip Kelly be retained? Do you support that? Longtime listeners know your feelings on Chip, but I want to challenge you a little here. UCLA metrics consensus ranks. They are trending up. And so in 2014, they were 20th, then 15, they were 23rd, then 16, they were 54th, then 17, they were 53rd. That's the downward slope of the Jim Mora era. And then since Chip was hired, they've been 74th, 65th, 34th, and 35th. Yeah, so I think he will be retained. I do not support it. And I think what you're seeing here is a pretty obvious rise to mediocrity. I don't think it takes 4 years to rebuild the program. I think they're now 35th, and I think this was a culmination year in a lot of ways. With a senior quarterback who's likely leaving, a running back who could leave, a tight end who could leave, several, at least two offensive linemen who could leave. I think they're going to be back to rebuilding slightly next year. So if you, and I'm not talking to you, Andrew, but if you, the listener and UCLA fan, are comfortable with a program that rises to the level of 35th in the country in a culmination year, then yes, you might want Chip Kelly to be retained. For me, I think there's more to be done at UCLA than that. As you can see at the beginning of this list, they were 20th in 2014.
Yeah.
And number two, us Washington fans would love for you to revisit the stunning firing of Jimmy Lake at Washington. How did it unravel so fast, leading to a dismissal, a shocking 13 games into his tenure as head coach, a length that would normally elicit outrage from the media? We missed you on the show last week. Oh, so this was.
I think we recorded on the 22nd. So this was might have been before that.
Oh, we didn't read this one.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't think we read it, so we must have missed this one, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, the Jimmy Lake firing was bad. It was really good. They should have done it, but it was a badass move from Washington to make that decision. They did it with, like, kind of the weird thing about him pushing players or whatever. I don't think that was the reason. I think the reason was that he obviously sucked as a coach and had made horrible decisions in who he hired as assistants, and there wasn't maybe enough oversight of what he was doing as a first-year head coach. And they rectified that error. That's exactly what you want out of an athletic director and an athletic department, is to say, oh, wow, we screwed up badly, and fix it. And they did.
I talked to a source up there, and it just seemed like they were like, oh, my God, this is, they just realized they made a bad hire and they needed to fix it. So, yeah, kudos to that. Like, you don't want to just stick with it because it was, you're like, yep, this is not working. He just wasn't doing a good job. So you move on.
Right.
I think Robert in Texas is next. That was after when we recorded. No more Civil War. What do you think of the new what do you think the new name for the Oregon State game should be? My vote is Geoduck Cup, Robert from Texas. The Platypus Cup is
Oregon's the Evergreen State, right? We've acknowledged that, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of apples too. Could we be like a apple game or something?
Like some sort of apple, like what do they often have, like cups or chalices?
Oh, yeah, like a cup.
You call this the apple cup?
Hey.
Well, Oregon at one time, how about this one? Oregon at one time was a territory. What if we called this, I don't know, and I'm just spitballing here, but like the territorial game, the territorial bowl, territorial cup. I love it. Corvallis and Eugene are really close to each other, right?
Huh?
Would you call it maybe like crosstown?
Sort of like crosstown rivalry. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I think it's like you cross several towns and then it's a rivalry. So I think it's a crosstown rivalry. And, you know, I think every year we've kind of realized this is a big game, right?
Oh.
So I think we could probably call this, use an article or not, I think this is definitely the big game.
I go without the article, just say big game. I think it's such a big one.
Yeah, I think so.
I like it. So. Thanks, Robert. That's
okay,
good
great.
Stuff.
Yeah. I think we've got a lot of good ideas there.
Yes. Let's spitball in a little bit.
All right. Ooh.
Amy?
Which one's next? Is Amy next?
Yeah, I think Amy. There was the other one we responded to, so I think it's Amy.
All right, this is from Amy. Ryan and Dave, each week I look forward to listening to your podcast. I know it's good because I end up agreeing, disagreeing, screaming, and laughing at you and with you every time. And you both are very influential as I've signed up for Sling TV, got my tickets to the Pac-12 championship game, and plan to use my bookie all based on your recommendations. I would just remind you that with great power comes great responsibility. Ooh. I have a question, a what-if scenario, and a point of clarification for you to respond to. First, my question with a bit of background. Utah has had a very long and rich rivalry with BYU. I remember attending high school in Salt Lake City, Utah, and two of our coaches who were across the hall from each other decked out their classrooms in Utah and BYU colors, respectively. It was a big event known as the Holy War and always played on Rivalry Week. However, when Utah joined the Pac-12, we were told that we could not continue that rivalry because we were supposed to be rivals with Colorado. What? We were told that Utah needs to play the last game of the season with an in-conference team, but what really gets my goat is that there are plenty of examples of teams that do not follow this. How many times has USC played Notre Dame on Rivalry Week? Notre Dame is not an in-conference game, and look at this year. SC is playing BYU during Rivalry Week. How does this make any sense? I got so heated about this, and I'm hoping for a rational answer that actually makes sense. What does it hurt to have Utah playing BYU during Rivalry Week? BS answer. That doesn't make any sense because USC now consistently plays a team after UCLA, which is not then Rivalry Week. Stanford
play at Notre Dame.
He plays Notre Dame every other year during what would ostensibly be Rivalry Week. It doesn't make any sense. It's because of trying to fit Notre Dame into the schedule and the way that USC particularly faces Notre Dame, but also Stanford. USC plays Notre Dame always in October, I think, on the road, and then they're always playing Notre Dame at home at the end of November.
Yeah. I think this is something that George Kliavkov, he doesn't like some of the weird scheduling things that were happening before. That's something maybe is fixed. If you could have BYU and Utah at the end of the season, I think that'd be great.
Yeah. And then next, my what-if scenario. During your off-season podcast, you started a what-if series. I'm a little late, but know that you read all emails and entertain any question scenario, no matter how untimely or ridiculous. LOL. What if Urban Meyer did not leave Utah? Would Utah join the Pac-12 sooner? Would we have joined a different conference? Would Meyer have ended up in the NFL? He would have stacked national championships at Utah until he was ready to leave, because that's the recipe that he's, you know, put out there at every single school he's been at.
Yeah, if he didn't leave right away, he would probably leave the next season or next season, because he'd still have success. Like, he would be very desirable, right?
He would have stacked national championships, though.
If you're like, he can't leave, he has to stay, then yes.
Like, say he stays for a decade and then leaves.
He would have had
two or three titles?
Yeah, and Utah would have joined something. Like, they would have joined.
Sure as hell would have. Probably the Big 12 at that time, though.
Yeah, that would make sense.
One point of clarification to my Cali-centric host. When you did a segment on Pac-12 mascots, you were both unsure about Utah's mascot. Our mascot is Swoop, a red-tailed hawk. The drum and feather that you commonly see is our logo. You could use a hawk soundbite in addition to the bow and arrow, which I like, too. Thank you both, Ryan, for preparing and putting out this podcast. You mentioned there are other podcasts that cover the conference, but none like this one. You're the only one in my book, and I really do hope that I and other listeners can meet up with you guys at the championship game, because you both must attend. Go Utes, Amy. And the PS is something for us to read.
Started her own podcast, so that's cool. So good for her.
Yeah. I unfortunately will not be there, but Ryan will be carrying the banner of the Podcast of Champions.
Yeah,
we don't have a banner. It's metaphorical.
We should get a banner. Someone asked about, I think we have a question about swag too. Quick question is a text message. What odds would you give Dorian Thompson-Robinson playing for a different college football team next year?
Zero.
Yeah, I think he's coming. I think he's coming back. You may throw a voicemail in?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, here we go.
What's going on, guys? I was going to call you once the whole Lincoln Riley news dropped. But I would have just been screaming and running around. I just think that would be stupid. So I waited a little bit until I calmed down. So I asked a good question. And so basically, my question is that now with Lincoln Riley at USC, which I'm very happy about, How will it affect recruiting in the Pac-12? Because I know there's questions of, will Malik Brown come back and stay in SoCal, and will, you know, basically all the, you know, four whatever big time 2023 commits stay in LA and decommit from Oklahoma. But I want to know, like, how will the Pac-12 recruiting be affected by this? You know, were there, do you think there are a lot of players that committed to Oregon, for instance, that really only committed there because they just don't trust what's going on with USC head coach? They'd be interested in coming back. Maybe there are some guys at other schools that you think were like that. So, you know, now that USC has, you know, a very good and honestly probably elite head coach, do you think that, you know, that's going to be a clear indicator that, you know, some of these guys that committed to other schools in the Pac-12 would leave? My question is about specifically Pac-12 players. So thank you.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. Ryan was talking about the knock-on effect that came from Pete Carroll era, where it was, you know, maybe it made it seem cooler to stay home, and maybe that will play out that way. It's going to be hard. I think there's, you know, I think Lincoln Riley and the USC staff that he puts in place are going to be able to clean up a lot in California. And that might push, you know, Oregon and Washington a little bit out of, you know, California's top five-star guys. That they're probably still going to compete for them, but maybe not get them as frequently. And so they might have to drop down a level a little bit more with who they're recruiting in California, because they're still going to need to recruit the state, but they also might push nationally a little bit more. It's going to have ramifications. I don't know if they're going to be positive. I think that's that takes it all a little far for me, because I think there's a lot of, you know, happy talk about the, like, positive impact for the Pac-12. And I think as a league, as a perception standpoint, there absolutely will be. But on an individual team basis, I don't see why USC recruiting at a much higher level has a positive recruiting effect on any other team in the league.
Well, I, by the way, as this we're recording this, five-star running back Malik Brown just committed to USC. So it's starting.
I'm going to vomit.
He's staying. He said, Mama, I'm staying home. Los Angeles, let's turn it up a little. Fight on. Go Trojans. That's what he tweeted out. So here's the thing. I feel like what's going to happen is you're going to have to, like, USC, you didn't need to compete against USC a lot of times because they were just incompetent. Now they're going to be very competent, right? They're going to be very good at what they do. Does that mean, does UCLA, that was like sort of half-assed recruiting, go, you know, we better actually recruit a little bit? You know, Oregon's already stepped it up. They've already been hitting it hard. Now their job's going to be a lot harder because a lot of these guys are going to end up, you know, going to USC. But I feel like there's going to be more investment in, oh crap, we better recruit harder, because USC is going to be, they're not just going to like recruit with the name. They're actually going to recruit hard. So maybe that helps, Dave. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't see it, but yeah, it could happen.
All right. Well, thanks for that voicemail.
All right. This is from David.
Okay.
Pod idea. Hi, David and Ryan. I enjoy your podcast. It is easily the most entertaining Pac-12 podcast, probably because the others are more focused on being informative. Wow.
Is that a little dig?
I've been playing along the season on picking games. I'm practicing for when California wakes up and finally allows sports betting. So far, I'm 27-17, but in fairness to you both, I don't try to pick every game. That gave me an idea for next season. Why don't you have a competition to involve your listeners? Folks can enter for free and get 10 units each week to invest as they want on picking games and over-unders. At the end of the season, there would be an overall winner and a winner for each school. Maybe one of your sponsors can donate the merch prizes, and another sponsor can handle the administrative part of running the contest. The pod will pick up contact info for listeners, and the listeners will be ever more tightly glued to your show. David, go Bears. I love it. Matthew, you're our man. Figure this out for us.
Yeah, we have to figure something out for that, because that's like,
That's a lot of administrative duties.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's some work, but we could figure it out. We got a text that just said, best day ever.
That was right after Lincoln Riley was hired.
Okay. And then another text. What's up, fellas? I hope you both had a solid Thanksgiving. Question for each of you. I think it means like to hear your honest initial verbal reaction to the Lincoln Riley hiring at USC. What was the first word or sentence out of your mouths when you heard the news? As always, thank you. Keep up the good work. Fight on. TK from Orange County.
I'm a big lengthy fuck guy. That's what I say. And that's what I said immediately after I heard that.
It was it was pretty shocking, because, you know, we've been covering the search and all that. And Bruce Feldman, you know, friend of the show, tweeted something about it, like, watch out for Lincoln Riley, like USC might make a run at him. And I know Bruce doesn't tweet for nothing. So it was like, oh, so you're sort of like a little like, that's interesting. But didn't really think it would happen, but it was just like, holy crap, you know? And yeah, I mean, it's changed my life, essentially. Like, it's changed my business. Like, it's, things have gone absolutely insane since this happened. And, you know, we're sort of like, Dave covers UCLA, I cover USC. Like, you're sort of at the whim of what goes on with the program you cover.
Not sort of. People have this mistaken impression. Like, I was clarifying this on our message board this week, but like, that we are in it for, like, quote, clicks. And I'm like, if it was as simple as me posting some salacious crap about UCLA to, like, get clicks, and that's just going to directly translate to, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars, I would be posting nothing but salacious gossip about UCLA. The reality is, the biggest driver of subscriptions, which is the biggest driver of revenue for all of these sites, is when the team does well, or when they hire a big name coach, or when recruiting is popping off big time. That's it. We, like, in a way, we are, like, probably bigger, like, we need the program to do well, people, than anyone involved with the program. Like, they have guaranteed contracts. Our whole thing is, when the teams do well, we make more money. Like, we are more aligned with, like, wanting the program to win a lot of games than probably many people involved with the respective programs. People need to understand that we are so tied to the success of these programs, particularly football, that is the lens. Like, if you're looking for bias in what we're talking about, it's because of that lens. We are laser focused on that because that is when we make the most money.
Yeah, it's really weird. And I feel like we've been, you know, doing really good content, at least at USCFootball.com. I feel like we've been doing a good job. But we would post recruiting updates and nobody cared because Clayton was the head coach. And it gets a little demoralizing after a while. Like, you feel like, hey, we do these good podcasts or do whatever, and there's just not the interest. It, like, completely changed. The floodgates just wide open. We had our biggest selling day in one day, and we, you know, we're all-time high for subscriptions, just all on this Lincoln Riley news. And, you know, it's going to be a crazy couple of weeks because he's going to probably sign a whole bunch of five-star guys like he just did. So completely changing the fortunes of what, you know, at least what, you know, the business part of this is. So I might be done on the POC, Dave. Now, I'm, you know, the business is going to do well on the other side. So I might just be done with this.
Whatever.
This is for Dave from Brennan in Kansas. I'm a USC fan. I just want to say your tweets after the Riley news made me laugh quite a bit. I'm writing you, though, to tell you that as shitty as you may feel, at least you're not a Pac-12 referee, in particular the one who thought an 8 was a 0 and threw a flag for delay of game against USC. I guess I have to have a question with this. So how's Chip's recruiting class looking, Brennan in Kansas?
It's looking like ass, Brennan. Thank you for asking. all right. Next one is Alex Grinch had that one great game coaching Washington State's defense, and that got him a new job. It seems ever since then, he's changed to giving 10-yard cushions like your standard UCLA defense. Can you explain that? I don't know. I don't watch a lot of Oklahoma football. Maybe it's because they're playing a bunch of high-powered passing teams, and that's sort of what you have to do. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, I know Alex Grinch hasn't been in the Pac-12 for a while, but he did a really good job with Washington State when he was there. Was a year or so at Ohio State and been at Oklahoma. I mean, they're top three in scoring every year. Like, I don't think the defense is going to be good. There's people have gone back and forth. I think Alex Grinch is a good, you know, defensive coordinator, but there's some USC fans that aren't super happy with it, Dave. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, here, I'll play another voicemail first.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. I was just wondering this with the recent hire of Lincoln Riley at USC and Brian Kelly at LSU. I assume Ryan probably obviously knows a lot more about the Lincoln Riley hire at USC, but I was wondering the case of these two big name hires. To me, as an outsider, they would strike me as guys that would never leave their jobs or seem like pretty safe hires. You know, it seems like nobody really hires an Oklahoma coach away unless they're going to the NFL. So I was wondering, and with your guys' experience in these, how do you think these deals went down? Do you think it was a matter of the USC and LSU athletic director saying we're a strong brand and we're going after whoever we want and we're going to make them say no? Or do you think it was more so Lincoln Riley's agent or Brian Kelly's agent kind of tipping off the athletic directors and saying, hey, if you make a certain offer, these guys could be interested? I was just kind of wondering how big name hires like this kind of go, if you guys know anything. Regardless, hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving. Thanks, guys.
I got to talk to Brandon Sosna a little bit, and he had said, I had heard this before, when he was at Cincinnati, they really liked Lincoln Riley. I think it was when they hired Luke Fickell, but it was when Bob Stoops was retiring. They didn't know that Lincoln Riley would get the head job at Oklahoma. And Sosna told us, like, Lincoln Riley didn't even return their call at Cincinnati. So he's someone that they've been looking at for a long time. So it's not like they just said, oh, he's a big name. Like, that's someone that they've coveted when they were at another school and there was a different situation and they still coveted him. I honestly think the LSU thing, because the athletic director, Scott Strickland? I forget his name, but
Woodward?
Scott Woodward, yeah. He's the guy that took, you know, Chris Peterson away from Boise at Washington. When he was at Texas A&M, brought in, why am I blanking on his name, the national championship winning coach?
Jimbo Fisher.
Sorry, a lot of words today. And they thought he'd go big game hunting again. And I think that was more of a later in the process thing where the USC staff really liked Riley from years ago. I don't know if that was the case with LSU. It just seemed like they needed to make a big splash. So who else could we get a big splash with? And they went after, Brian Kelly. That's just my thoughts. I don't know if you have any thoughts, Dave.
Yeah, I think with Kelly, it was more of a somewhat traditional situation where Kelly had made, there were offseason reports and there was constant noise that USC was looking at him, which USC probably wasn't. So where's that noise coming from? I think there was noise that he was unhappy. And if you were good at reading the tea leaves, you could kind of get that. And it was probably more open than you would expect a guy who's been at an elite-ish institution for 12 years who has, a couple of playoff runs in him. I think that was maybe what stood out to LSU is that, okay, this guy's got some noise coming out about him. His agent is probably putting some of that stuff out to various reporters. So maybe we take a look at him. That's the one that I think is more risky, the hire for LSU. I don't know. Brian Kelly he's a good coach. I think he's done some good work at Notre Dame. I don't know if he's a fit at LSU. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he does recruiting in the rough and tumble SEC. Notre Dame recruits sort of differently. LSU is, you're going to have to get, nose deep in some muck to do the recruiting properly there. And I don't know if he has it in him.
Yeah.
So that's going to be more of an interesting one for me. But yeah, both of them are pretty, it's kind of a rare situation for both. And I think a big part of it, if we're just talking about the reality of it, it's the dollars being thrown around. I mean, Lincoln Riley, did we ever get an official number on that one, Ryan?
No, there was some guy on Twitter just like made up some numbers and
but it's probably north of 10 million. I don't know what it is, but it's probably north of 10 million. Brian Kelly's getting around 10 million. It sounds like maybe a little bit more. That Mel Tucker extension at Michigan State really set the market. And if you were not prepared to immediately offer that sort of extension to your head coach, they're out. Cause that's real. Those are real insane dollars. Those are making you not just a rich man, like $10 million in LA. People always talk about, oh, cost of living's more in LA, so you've got to really want it. Yeah. You know what? $10 million makes you super wealthy here too. he's going to be fine.
He'll be fine. That was Perk, right? This is Effects of the Riley Hire from Eric. Hey, Ryan and Dave, I've been hearing about the Lincoln Riley Hire at USC, and as a Colorado fan, I'm wondering how this will impact my team. I just want the Buffs to get to the level of Washington State or Arizona State, meaning regularly going 7-5 or 8-4 and making a bowl. Will this have any effect on that? Should I be happy about more money from more lucrative television deals as a result of USC's enhanced profile? Just upset that we will never, ever beat USC. Should I care at all? Also, are there any Pac-12 teams other than the obvious UCLA who could particularly be affected by this? Thanks, guys.
Okay, so for the people who are – for the programs that are like the back half of the Pac-12, and I'm not like disparaging here, I actually think this will largely have a positive effect because of the increased money. There should be more playoff runs in the Pac-12's future, and that will mean more money, and maybe a better TV deal if there's a resurgent USC. Like, those things will have real impacts on the back half of the league. And again, not disparaging, this was always going to be more than likely a loss for your program, right? You were more than likely going to lose to USC, and you're not usually competing against USC for recruits. So there's a lot of things that are negatives for the top tier of the league that are not going to be negatives for you, and there's a lot of positives from a money standpoint. For the top tier of the league and for UCLA, you know, I'm not going to say they're in the top tier, but for Oregon, Washington, ASU to an extent, this is, I think, going to be a net negative for the for them because of what USC, when it's full powered, can do in recruiting. They're going to pull all those guys that, you know, Oregon and Washington especially have been able to pull out of California. It's going to be harder and harder to beat USC for them. So I think that's an important factor. It's going to be harder to simply beat USC on the field, which is another important factor. So I think it's a net negative for them. And for UCLA, I think it's obviously a huge negative because they need to recruit LA too at a high level. Chip Kelly has largely eschewed that, but they need to. And if this prevents them even further from doing so, that's going to be devastating for the program. And it will also more than likely lead to, I mean, UCLA, I would say since Jim Mora started in 2012, has more or less held its own in the rivalry, but they needed to use this period to stack up some wins, because now going into the Lincoln Riley era, unless they really upgrade, it's going to be again a period of USC dominance, which is just not great to watch.
Yeah, and I would say to Eric, let me look it up real quick. This year, USC was awful and beat Colorado at home on the road 37-14. So I don't think, you know, this was a year you could have beat USC. So I don't think it's going to have that much effect on. But like I said, like Dave said, I think there'll be overall a positive effect.
All right, let's try to go rapid fire through these last.
Okay.
Because we're dragging. All right, this is from Paul Webfoot. Hello, champions. This is Champions Coaching Carousel, Chaos Clairvoyance. I have a prediction for the wild ride that has been the coaching carousel over the last few days. But first, a joke. What's the difference between Herm Edwards and the Invisible Man? I've got a better chance of seeing the Invisible Man at a playoff game. Whew. Anyways, my official predictions. Cristobal goes to Miami. Oregon hires Urban Meyer, who has a health problem due to the Jacksonville climate and meth gators. Saban decides he wants to compete with Meyer and Riley, so he convinces ASU to fire Herm Edwards and hire him instead. UCLA, faced with keeping Kelly against Meyer, Saban, and Riley, dissolves their football program and officially becomes a basketball school. Oklahoma tries to get tricky and hires Jimmy Lake and Nick Rolovich to be co-head coaches and also fill their respective coordinator roles. It doesn't end well. Luke Fickell goes to Notre Dame for the Mega Lols. And Brent Venables, who is pissed that Clemson didn't make him head coach, leads Cincinnati to a natty over Georgia because Kirby Smart took the Jaguars' job. Thoughts? I think that's exactly how it'll play out, obviously, except for Marcus Freeman being hired at Notre Dame. But maybe Luke Fickell goes to coach Duke, and then Brent Venables leads Cincinnati to a natty over Georgia.
Paul, I like the way he's thinking.
He nailed it.
Yeah, he got that one. Let me do a voicemail.
Hey, David and Ryan. Hope you guys are doing well. This is Todd from Orlando here. So I just saw that USC hired Lincoln Riley. Just wanted to get your thoughts on them hiring Mike Riley, Lincoln's older brother, as an assistant this upcoming season. Just wanted to get your thoughts. Thanks, guys. Bye.
I don't think they're related.
Pretty funny.
Yeah. They tried to hire him before.
It's back to 2001. Yeah, exactly.
All right. What do we got next?
I'll do the Hitler one. Waltzian neorealism. Probably some obscure reference I'm not going to look up. Back in 2015, I asked you boys whether USC and UCLA were in a zero-sum relationship regarding recruits from Southern California. Your response was that there was so much talent being produced in the area that it can fill out not just those teams, but the entire conference of Pac-12 quality players. That is high 3 stars and low 4 stars, and that the only real competition is for the dozen or so top-end recruits. One, do you still feel the same way today? No. No, I don't.
I don't even remember saying that, but he's referencing something we said 6 years ago, which is great.
Yeah, I don't. I think there's still enough talent here to certainly fill out parts of the rosters for basically every team in the league, but not enough to fill them out with, like, Pac-12 quality players.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Two, my read of the effects to the recruiting landscape of Lincoln Riley to USC is that it's anti-parity move that'll flatten the middle class of the Pac-12. With Clay Helton and Chip Kelly in place, schools like ASU, Cal, and Washington have been picking up some top-end LA blue chips who would have stayed home with competent recruiters in town. I think that'll now come to an end, and those mid-tier recruiting powers will just wind up with mid-tier Southern California talent supplemented with their own locals. What do you think about that theory? Yeah, it's kind of what I was saying. Like, it's going to be hard, especially for the middle-tier powers. And then three, I also think that Riley to USC doesn't change the picture much for UCLA or Oregon. UCLA because Chip gonna chip, and Oregon because A, the Ducks aren't restricted to the Pac-12 footprint, and B, they've been pulling top-end talent against Dante Williams for a couple cycles, and there's room for 2 seats at the table for the LA Blue Chips. That is to say, this will stabilize the Pac-12 into bipolarity rather than unipolarity as some USC fans dream, or multipolarity as Larry Scott wanted. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's possible. Yeah, I think the Ducks are gonna like the Ducks getting the 5 stars out of LA that USC wants. Those days are over. I don't care if Dante Williams or whatever. This is a whole different story. So yeah,
I don't think Kayvon Thibodeau is going to Oregon if USC is full powered. Now I don't think it completely like destroys Oregon recruiting by any means, but
no,
I think they will have to transition to going a little bit more national, going a little bit more into Texas, going a little bit more into Florida. I think Oregon has that capability. I think they can be a national power in that respect, but I think it's going to be harder and harder to pick out, 5 stars to get from the, especially from the LA area.
Yeah, like DeAnthony Thomas was sort of like an exception to the rule. The rule lately has been the 5 stars going to Oregon. Like that's been the rule. It's going to go back to the exception. It's not like Oregon can't get a 5-star out of LA, but it's going to be more rare. It's not going to be like, oh, it's expected to happen every year. Like that's not.
Yeah. The biggest impact is probably for just nationally. There's going to be fewer guys from LA area going to Oklahoma, Alabama, Clemson. You know, that's not going to happen at anywhere near the rate it was.
Yeah, those programs know the smorgasbord, the free lunch of recruiting 5-star talent from Southern California is most likely over. So
yeah,
Frank in Sacramento, the one answer to two coaching change questions. Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly both left their positions as successful programs where they realized winning the national championship was impossible. They both moved to programs where they believe winning the national championship is possible.
Fart noise. That's not why they left.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big part of it. I think they improved their chances, but they both could have won national championships at their previous spots because both of those programs have been able to make the playoff. That's all you really need. Once you get your foot in the door, luck can happen. And Oklahoma was really close.
Like, they were super close, like overtime. Yeah.
No, you want to know why they left? You want to know why they left, Frank? Because they got a shitload of money. They got a shitload of money and a slightly better chance of winning. That's really what it was.
Yeah, and it's going to be harder at Oklahoma when you're in the SEC. You're going from now you were the best or second best job in the Big 12 to being like the fourth best job in the SEC. You're the number one job in the Pac-12. So there's some advantages doing that.
Yep. All right. This is from somebody. Follow-up question for Dave. I don't know what the initial question was. How does Deshaun Foster not get more recognition for the work he's done with their running backs? Literally every year since Tripp took over, his backs have overperformed their expectations. Pay that man his money. I think he gets some recognition. He should probably get more money. But I would say Chip Kelly, I don't remember the last year he had where he didn't have a good rushing attack. May have been that one year with the Niners. But otherwise, he devises a good rushing attack. I think it's not entirely running back independent, but I think his offense makes running backs look good.
All right. Danny says, this may be more of a Dave question, but Ryan, I'd like to get your thoughts as well. With the USC hire of Lincoln Riley, I've been thinking a lot about what this means for the state of UCLA football. It seems that like UCLA missed a major window of opportunity with USC being down the last decade, specifically not being able to take advantage of the LA recruiting base and helping themselves even win one conference title. While I do think Chip's hire was the right move at the time, his unwillingness to recruit has not helped at all. It sucks that it turned out to be so bad in hindsight. Ryan's factoid of Chip winning 32 games in a row would mean he would only tie Clay Helton's USC coaching record absolutely blew my mind. Looking back, is there anything UCLA could have done differently? Is the Riley hire creating more of a sense of urgency amongst UCLA fan base or administration? And what do you both think UCLA needs to do as soon as possible to remain competitive against USC and the rest of the Pac-12? Love the podcast and thanks from Danny.
They could have fired Chip last year. After last season, but otherwise no. I mean, they kind of just, you know, they thought they made the right hire and then they tried to commit to it, and now they're in a no man's land where firing him after 8-4 might feel untenable to certain people in the UCLA administration or in their booster base, but also you're faced with again the fully operational Death Star. So what do you do? And I think it's really, 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 really bad timing for UCLA.
I think immediately, though, I mean, you have to get on the recruiting trail. You have to recruit and compete. Getting a great defensive coordinator that maybe is an ace recruiter as well would be awesome. You can do stuff like that. I don't know. But you got to try to compete. You know, Dante Williams probably not going to be on the staff. Maybe hire him. I don't know. I mean, whatever you do to, like, I know Chip Kelly's not big into the local recruiting stuff, but you got to get there somehow. So maybe it's hiring a couple assistants that can help you do that. I don't know what you think, Dave, but that would help.
Yeah, I think that's right.
All right.
All right. This is from Scott. Hey, Ryan and Dave, looking back on the season, I think we should all revel in what was clearly meant to be Larry Scott's masterpiece. The season of parity, mediocrity, and no real winners, just bad punts and worse refs. Not the season the conference wanted, but the season we deserved. My questions. Do you think the conference got stronger, weaker, or stayed the same with the new coaching hires? Do you think there will be any more significant changes, or does David Shaw live to fight another day? I'm not sure what to think of the Dickert hire, and we love your... Okay, so...
stronger.
It got stronger, obviously. And yeah. David Shaw more than likely lives to fight another day. I'm not sure what to think of the Dickert hire, and would love your insightful feedback. I wish Wazoo had swung for the fences. Instead, they chose to bunt and go with the safe, underwhelming hire. His very short time at head coach was impressive, but I sincerely question whether he can actually lead a program like Wazoo and be successful. It feels very short-sighted to me. What do you think? Who wins the conference next year? Thank you, and keep up the good work. I actually really like the Dickert hire.
Yeah.
I think he's potentially a good defensive coordinator. I'm interested in the idea of a defensive guy being the head coach. And also, I don't think they're spending a ton of money to make it happen. So if it doesn't work out in 3 years, then you can fire him.
I like Pat Chung as an athletic director. I think he's really smart. They handled this, you know, Rolovich stuff as well as you could under the circumstances. And sometimes you just see something in place. You see a guy taking over the program. He's done a really good job there, you know, just his short time. And it's not just, oh, the players like him or whatever. Like, you see how he's running the program. You're like, I could go out and find someone I hope would run the program like that, or I got a guy right here. So I don't have an issue with this. I think sometimes people get lazy and just promote from within and just go with that. But I feel like they genuinely think he's going to be good. So I like the hire.
Cool.
Let's go. This is a text message from Jay in New York. What happens to Jackson Dart? Considering Lincoln Riley, the five-star quarterback's coming in, Oklahoma's quarterback potentially coming in, and the F the Mormon chance. Okay. If he leaves, is there another candidate in the Pac-12? ASU, maybe. So, yeah, Jackson Dart could potentially – I think there's going to be a lot of turnover on the roster, like a lot. They could bring in Caleb Williams, the freshman quarterback that was starting for Oklahoma towards the, you know, later part of the season. The Malachi Nelson guy, they got a five-star quarterback commit, but he's 2023, so that's not. But for Dart will most likely be the starter unless they bring in Caleb Williams, would be my guess.
Yeah, that sounds right. It'll be interesting. I mean, they're also going to recruit some five-star dudes, so they're going to have a lot of talent. They can make choices. Jackson Dart was the best option on this roster, but there's a very good chance he won't be the best option on the next year's roster.
Yeah, they'll be, the roster's going to look very different, so we'll have to see what happens. It's going to depend on the staff, which players leave, all that kind of stuff. So I think anyone could be a portal guy. Like, it's just, that's going to happen.
This is one for you. Hey, Ryan, are you going to be in Vegas for the game? And if so, are you going to be giving away swag? I thought you were giving away keychains or something like that at USC games earlier this year.
Yeah, we had a whole bunch of jockey keychains of different colors, and it was, I think it was the USC-Oregon State game, and we gave them away. So, I don't have any more of those. We won't have any swag, but I will be there. Hope, you know, I'll tweet it out too, so hopefully we can meet some of you guys.
Cool. I'll read this one because that one was short.
Okay.
This is from Keon in the Bay Area. Riley to USC is bad for the podcast. Boys, the worst side effect of USC hiring a guy with two first names is that it will mean the end of this beloved podcast as we know it. Consider, this podcast has never seen a good UCLA or USC football program, the two schools that you guys cover. I would argue that the underachievement and objective hilarity of the two LA football programs has been essential to the success of this podcast. It prevents the two of you from being homers and allows you to flourish in the roles you do best, absolutely mocking and crucifying the schools you cover. Nobody wants to hear Ryan talk favorably about USC. Go ahead, picture that in your head. Can you hear it? Me neither. This podcast does not need a good USC. It needs a 3-9 butt Stanford team crushing USC in week 2 and an interim USC coach kicking a field goal down 14 while UCLA is gaining 10 yards per play. This podcast thrives on mediocrity and incompetence, and it is essential that all the schools, but especially UCLA and USC, continue to prove that mediocrity and incompetence. Pour one out for the POC. It's been real. Keon in the Bay Area. P.S. I intentionally did not factor in Dave being a UCLA basketball homer in the last 2 years because, as Ryan reminds us every January, this is not a basketball podcast.
Yes.
So one thing I'll say, just as solace. Okay. Yes. There's a 90% chance this podcast becomes insufferable. I will admit. it won't be my fault. It'll be his, but there's a 90% chance. But the 10% chance it doesn't involves Lincoln Riley failing at USC. And do you, the listener, have any idea how funny that will be? Like, do you have any idea how funny this podcast will be if Lincoln Riley sucks at USC, it'll be amazing. It'll be glorious. And I'd say there's like a, you know, a 10% chance that happens. It's going to be awesome.
Nice.
Stick around.
Yeah, that's a 10%. Hold, sorry, one sec. I was about to read this text message. I just wanted to check Twitter and make sure USC didn't get another five-star commit in the last five minutes. You. So
You'll be dead.
Text message. How great would it be for Cristobal to leave for Miami only to have a desperate Oregon jettison any vestiges of integrity and throw Phil Knight's gold-plated codpiece at Urban Meyer to secure him as the next coach? Pac-12 chaos in a positive direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Oregon's maybe the one program in the league like that could just – well, no, not the one. The one that could make it happen that would be willing to do it. Because USC was not going to be willing to do it. UCLA would not be willing to do it. Washington would not be willing to do it. But Oregon? Oregon's desperate to win.
Isn't he already making like over $10 million a year? Like, what is
Phil Knight? He wants no part of staying in Jacksonville. Come on, get out of there.
You think, like, they've actually won a couple games, right? I don't know.
Oh, whatever. Yeah, no, he'll have a nervous breakdown if he has to stay there and lose 8 games a year.
Yeah.
All right, this is from Peter in Vancouver. The 11 Dwarfs. Gentlemen, I'm sure that you guys remember the Pac-10 being referred to a while as USC and the 9 Dwarfs. Now that USC has hired a coach that should put them in the playoff discussion for a while, I've been thinking about what this means for the rest of the schools in the Pac-12. First, obviously teams won't be thinking they can just come into the Coliseum and have their way with the Trojans the way the Beavers, Cardinal, Utes, and Bruins did this year. And the other teams in the South are probably thinking their path to the Pac-12 title game just got harder. And Cal and Stanford just had their schedules get harder as well. Beyond that, some fans may be thinking that USC being better will help raise the level for the rest of the conference. But as I pointed out above, that didn't happen before when USC was the dominant team in the conference. Given the mediocre play in the Pac-12 this year, what makes you think that USC won't just go back to being the 800-pound gorilla in the conference and leave the rest of the teams fighting for relevance? Peter in Vancouver. That's the point I've been making, Pete.
Yeah, I think Oregon's the key, though, because Oregon's there or close, right? And so just,
they've got to maintain a level.
You got to stay good. And UCLA's on the rise. You know, like teams like Oregon State on the rise. Utah being as good as they are.
Don't say that. Don't you dare say that about UCLA, okay?
What?
You just said UCLA's on the rise.
I mean, 8-4, like huge turnaround. UCLA
has reached cruising altitude.
On the rise. I mean, this guy's like, how many games they win last year, Dave? They haven't won any out of conference games.
I don't want to reiterate a threat from just a couple of minutes ago, but understand that it's pending.
It's just, you know, they should be undefeated next year, I would think. So
fight you. There's an argument that it won't have that huge of an effect, but yeah, I mean, I don't think it has this. I think people are talking about this like rising tide raises all boats thing that I just don't see as really possible. I guess I don't really see as probable. I guess it is possible, but I think that involves a lot of soft factors that aren't really in evidence for me. I think it's going to have a negative effect on talent acquisition for a lot of the teams in the league and maybe a positive overall impact monetarily and for the perception of the league as a whole nationally. I don't see why this makes ASU better. I don't see why it makes Washington better. That doesn't pass muster for me.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be tough on ASU. I mean, Washington hopefully going in a better direction. You know, the Jake Haener era returns. You know, they'll be good. They need a Jake at quarterback.
Yeah, Kalen DeBoer might make Washington better. But that's kind of independent of USC.
But like that's why you just don't. It won't be the 11 Dwarves, right? You want it. You want Washington to be like legit good, you know, and UCLA be legit good, and Oregon, you know, be legit contender. It would help. Oregon was number 3, what, in the one of the rankings, college football rankings. Like if USC was 9, you know, or something, like that helps Oregon, you know, that.
Well, and remember during the Pete Carroll era, like who the coaches were in the Pac-12 or Pac-10 at that time. Like, you had Carl Durrell at UCLA. You had, what was it, Ty Willingham and Keith Gilbertson at Washington?
Yeah,
you had, bad. I mean, Bilotti. But, like, the thing was, Oregon was okay. Oregon held its own during that period. Like, Dennis Dixon was 2007, which was just, like, just a hair over the peak of the Pete Carroll era, but it was still right there. Like, Oregon was good during that period. They weren't bad. Like, there were still some good things happening in the league, but, like, it was a lot of bad coaching, too.
Yeah, the Tedford stuff, he was good with, like, he was probably the coach that gave Carroll the most fits and stuff.
Yeah, but he had Walt Harris at Stanford.
Yeah, that wasn't so good.
Yeah.
Recruiting, also from Peter of Vancouver. Gentlemen, some of the other schools in the Pac-12, especially Oregon, have taken advantage of Clay Helton and Chip Kelly's relatively poor recruiting over the last few years. Does Lincoln Riley at USC mean that Oregon will have a tougher time recruiting the West Coast? Also, besides USC, how does any Pac-12 team benefit from an improved recruiting by USC? So we kind of went over this a bunch, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But thanks, Peter.
And this is from Jesse. Last question. Hire the coach to bring the players. Hello there, my dear podcasters. The question for Dave and the other guy whose name I can't remember because my brain can only flash Lincoln Riley now when I think of USC. Ugh, the horror. Ryan, that's right. So my question is, now that the transfer portal is basically college football's free agency, what's to stop coaches from taking their players with them and paying them something to do so? If you hire Coach X, then you get him and player A, B, and C to come with. Nothing. Nothing is stopping that.
You can't really pay the players directly, but...
Yes, you can.
Well,
you set up like some slush fund and then you call it something and then they're going to market whatever these players and put them on one billboard and they'll pay them $3 million to do it. They can pay them.
Okay.
As much as I didn't like the quote, sit out a year transfer policy, it kept up that hurdle for coaches taking their players with them. Will universities now expect players to come with coaches? And will the price tag only continue to go up with coaches as some of that money may land back with players, which in a way I'm actually for. So perhaps the real loser here is all those poor local car dealerships. They'll get priced out of the sponsorship market before it ever really took hold. It's totally unfair since the real reason I watched college football was to gather information about which local dealership I could be shopping at next. Thank you, Jesse.
Thanks, Jesse. I think you're hiring the coach for the coach. Like this isn't like in college basketball, like you could hire an assistant coach because his son is going to play, like, you know, the Mobley brothers, like, hey, you know, like, but I think it's going to be much less of something like that would happen in college football.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. That was a basketball thing. Crap. I don't want to do
that. Yeah, I know. We're
not a basketball.
You ended on a down note, man.
I know. USC is undefeated in basketball too. UCLA still is, right? Like they're
crushing. No, they lost to Gonzaga.
Oh yeah, the Gonzaga one, but still, I mean, they lost to like the number one team. We won't get into more Pac-12 basketball. That'll be the extent of it probably for the whole year, unless, you know, UCLA goes on some run and David's got to go rant about it and stuff. But I like those. Those are fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got to wrap it up. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Crazy stuff. And I hope they see some of the guys out there at the Pac-12 championship game in Las Vegas. I can't wait to see Allegiant Stadium, David. It should be fun.
Tons of fun.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. That's David. I'm Ryan. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.